what's nuts of all? Patrick Mahomes' dad, Pat Mahomes, is 50. Tom Brady is 43. And the two of them will square off in Super Bowl 55.
That's unbelievable. You think about it. You've got an 18-year age discrepancy between these two. But I'll tell you why I'm excited about this. You've got an opportunity. We all know Tom Brady's the GOAT. Think about this. 10 Super Bowls. Who would have ever thought we gave Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw, rightfully so much credit for playing in 4 Super Bowls and winning them? Tom Brady, 10. But if there's anybody who's ever going to catch Tom Brady, maybe not in Super Bowl appearances, but just potentially being the GOAT, Patrick Mahomes got an opportunity, but he's got to win this game.
Think about how successful Andy Reid and Mahomes have been hosting 3 consecutive AFC championship games. I mean, even in the run the Cowboys had in the 90s, right, in the Niners, they didn't host all these consecutive championship games, and certainly a formidable team. We were both on the Packers yesterday, Amal,
yeah.
And obviously that didn't go so well. People will talk about the decision to kick the field goal on 4th and goal from the 9. But right. You think there were other decisions made that were more critical.
Well, I go back to the second quarter. Remember when Aaron Rodgers got sacked and it was 2nd down and 18 with 34 seconds remaining? They were at about their own 32 or 33-yard line. They chose to throw the ball. It was intercepted by Murphy Bunting. To me, they should have run the football at that point in time, because what's the likelihood you're probably going to convert a 2nd down and 18? So you take 2 running plays, force Tampa to use their final 2 timeouts, because you had that inclination that Tampa was trying to get the ball back and do something when they took the timeout after the sack. It wasn't Green Bay that took the timeout. So I thought there was an opportunity for them to kind of say, hey, let's be conservative. We're only down 4 points. We had 1 failure inside the red zone. We get the ball to start the second half. The pick comes in, and then Mike Pettine decides, you know, it was like poker. Mike Pettine said, hey, listen, I see your bet, but I'm not calling. I'm going to raise you right here. And he flat-out raised Matt LaFleur's debacle there on the offensive side of the ball. They give up the touchdown. And for a king to get beat on that play was just horrendous. You can give up the middle of the field. They had no timeouts remaining. You just couldn't give up a deep play.
It's almost equivalent to the Greg Williams 0 coverage in the last play against the Raiders in that game that got him fired.
But Greg Williams is the kind of guy on a blackjack table, he's got a 20. He's literally going to try and draw the ace. We know he's a gambler. But, I mean, in this case with Mike Pettine, you just got to play it safe. You're in the NFC Championship game. There was no reason to take that type of risk. Worst case scenario, you concede 3 points. Let's say they get a 12-yard out, they get out of bounds, they kick the field goal, they make it. But other than that, you can't give up 7. It was just mentally catastrophic.
So the line opens 3 last night in 57. We saw action across most books, including here at Circa, grabbing up that Chiefs minus 3. We moved to 3.5 for a while, settled back in at 3 with juice towards the Chiefs. Your reaction to this opening line and the total, 57, now 56.5.
Yeah, I thought the total was a little bit high. Remember last year, this was a much better defense than either of these two teams are going to present in this game. So for me, I thought last year you wound up with not even 57 points with this prolific offense of the Kansas City Chiefs. And remember, Eric Fisher, torn ACL, looks like he's going to be, he's going to miss this game in all likelihood. So for me, I think the opening total was a little bit high, expected to come down. These two teams met earlier this year. Remember, Kansas City put up 17 points in the first quarter, and then after that, Tampa was able to really negate what they did, only scoring 10 points the rest of the way for the Chiefs.
This will be the first Super Bowl hosted by a home team. There will be fans in the stands. How much of a factor do you think that plays into this game?
I think it could be a little bit. I think you give maybe a point value. You know, it's a similar situation to what we had when these two teams matched up. Line was 3.5, came down to 3. I think it could be a similar situation in terms of how it plays out from a betting perspective on the number. But look, Kansas City offensively, I thought Andy Reid yesterday proved something to me how intelligent he is as a head coach. He took all the underneath stuff with Travis Kelce. They just kept on feeding Kelce because they were so preventative against the deep ball. They were afraid of getting beat deep, but they got crushed underneath.
Kelce's total catches in the prop was 7.5. He went over in the first half. He went over catches in the first half. You know, when you look back at this game, Tyreek Hill drops the pass on the first, and after that, they never stopped the Chiefs again.
Well, you know, listen, Bill Burr, who represents the Buffalo Bills there, Sean McDermott, I mean, to me, he was kicking field goals in a game you've got to score touchdowns. I thought in the opening drive they should have gone for it on 4th and 3. It was already a 51-yard field goal. That's a long field goal. Bass made it, no problem. But still, the reality is you're going to have to score touchdowns to beat them, and there were scenarios even at the end of the first half. I think you've got to take certain risk.
I agree with you there. That was a game you couldn't win by kicking field goals at all. I did agree to kick that they should take the field goal in the third quarter because there was still enough time left in that game that they had to stay within the 2 scores. But overall, you're not going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs kicking field goals. Welcome into The Nuts, the newest show in the VSiN family. Join myself, Mike Palm, and Amal Shah from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, as we handicap games, go over betting philosophies, and explore the ins and outs of the Las Vegas experience. Welcome, Amal.
Mike, pleasure to be here. Thank you. And I tell you what, thank you to Brent Musburger. He was instrumental in getting this thing together. Because normally speaking, Notre Dame and Ohio State really don't gel well together in anything.
No. I still have memories of Pepe Pearson running up and down the field at Notre Dame Stadium. Yeah, it was a pleasure, and it was fun 3 years ago hosting my guys in the desert with you. I mean, Brent and Vinny 5 days a week, and then I did Monday, Tuesday, you did Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I think Brent sort of created this rivalry by playing clips of what you would say to me on Monday, what I would say to you on Wednesday, and people really actually thought that we hated each other.
Yeah, absolutely, but that's good. You know, at least we created that animosity, as fictitious as it was. It was a lot of fun, and you know what? It's been a lot of fun with everybody here at VSiN, but looking forward to working with you. And what I like about it is you and I, we really get into a lot of live betting, a lot of different things from different angles. You know, you talked about it at the top. You and I both lost on the Packers, but we both jumped on the in-play 8.5. You know, when they were down 28-10, I thought there was going to be a great opportunity. You knew they were going to be throwing the ball. And by the way, Leonard Ford Fournette had already gone into fourth quarter mode. In the third quarter, he slid around the right end, and then he slides in bounds. I'm like, Lenny, you still got 7.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, buddy. You don't have your plane ticket back to Tampa for the Super Bowl just yet.
I'm all for those of us that are tuning in that haven't really seen us on different formats before or watched during this time frame. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I worked in the media in Dallas for 10 years, covering sports, covered the World Series, Super Bowls, Final Four. Was very fortunate to be able to experience a lot of great things in terms of covering sports. It was a lot of fun for me. But I've been out here in Vegas for 6 years professionally betting. And, you know, listen, I'll tell you right now, I tell this to everybody. I have highs and lows. You don't win everything. You got to figure out when you can make some money. You got to basically be cautious in your approach. And at the same time, though, you've got to make sure you don't go broke trying to take a profit. There's some opportunities sometimes hedging off, and we'll get into a lot of that. That's one of the things I'm looking forward to, is you and I really discussing the in-play angle. But, you know, just been involved in sports my entire life, so it's a lot of fun to work with someone like you who's really knowledgeable in this area.
Tell us about your poker background.
Well, you know, I learned the hard way, losing a lot of money, learning how to play, but I got into it. But I'm fairly certain most people that have tuned into VSiN and anybody that's played with me knows I'm a highly aggressive player, which probably doesn't come as a surprise to many people. But, you know, it's the same thing. It's no different than sports betting. You got to be able to kind of withstand the wins and the losses, kind of be able to navigate through those types of things. I just like the game. I like the competitiveness. I'm a hyper-competitive person.
Yeah, and my background is in poker, too. I'm from Iowa. I grew up, went to Notre Dame, was actually in the seminary program there for a while. After graduating, I taught school in a Catholic school in Iowa, and kind of got into the casino industry by accident. You know, I was making $16,800 teaching school and coaching three sports, and I said, this is going to be tough to pay back my student loans. Says Sally Mae, you're in trouble. So in the summers, I started dealing poker in a riverboat casino, and that was 25 years ago. And so that career just sort of took off for me. I missed the teaching, but 25 years now in casino operations, from Iowa to Indiana to Atlantic City, New Jersey, and then back to out here to Las Vegas, where I've worked since 2006 at Fitzgerald. So Derek bought that. So in this organization now for 15 years, and had that background. And I've been very fortunate with Derek's involvement with VSiN to be able to be a part of this and start coming on shows and really having fun with it and you know, honing our skill as bettors, you know, and figuring out what works, what doesn't work for us, finding new things, different angles. I never made a soccer bet in my life until the pandemic, and now, you know, look at how much I'm focused on that. So this should be an interesting ride, and I'm really looking forward to it with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. And, you know, it's so interesting you mentioned the soccer angle, because I think that's something that gets overlooked. So many times people will be like, well, I'm not a hockey fan. I'm not a fan of this particular sport. You don't have to necessarily be a fan of sport X, Y, or Z in order to get involved in it. If you think you have an advantage and an opportunity to make money doing it, that's what you really want to do. I get sometimes we tend to gravitate towards sports that we enjoy more. You know, for me, it's college football, college basketball. But again, I think there's opportunities, and you have to really look at it and see, hey, can I make money and be profitable doing this?
Yesterday was certainly a special day, Championship Sunday. I mean, growing up, yeah. I was a Cowboys fan growing up because I love Tom Landry. Many, many times, of course, they're involved in championship games, and to have those two title games. Let's talk about the first one. The first game in being in the game in Kansas City, where the defending champs are headed back to the Super Bowl. I thought Josh Allen, although he showed great improvement this year, in this tough spot, Tried to make too many plays himself and took too many big sacks to negate drives.
Well, I thought he had the little bit of a Deshaun Watson effect yesterday. He was holding on to the ball a little bit too long. But there was a couple of throws that probably should have been intercepted by Kansas City. The one to Ward, it was right in his hands. I mean, he threw it to him like he was the intended receiver. But to me, I thought once he kind of made those errors, he mentally regressed a little bit in that game. And I thought the moment might have been a little bit too big for him. Not to suggest or imply that he wouldn't have been successful, but I thought the rough start that they got off to, even though they were up 9-0, it just seemed like his passing game wasn't effective. Remember, he had Stephon Diggs on a quick out in the second quarter. He airmailed it, and I thought from there it was all downhill for Buffalo.
Yeah, Diggs only 2 catches in the first half. He'd been such an instrumental part of that offense, and then they go into the halftime down 9 points. Allen ends up with 88 yards rushing on 7 carries. Something very underrated with him, his ability to scramble. He's an excellent runner, and when he gets in the open field, he's a big boy to bring down.
He really is, but I'll tell you from a Buffalo perspective, the one thing I felt bad was the Tampa-Green Bay game was first because Bills fans were sitting there thinking to themselves, my God, we couldn't get rid of Tom Brady for 20 years. Now we're potentially seeing him again in the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, this is a Buffalo team that had to overcome the Patriots for a long time. They had a great season, but I think when you look at Kansas City, I could argue that they've got the 3 best players at their individual positions. Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, Tyreek Hill at wide receiver, and Travis Kelce at tight end. And if you prefer somebody else at wide receiver, I get it, no problem. But from a speed and quickness standpoint, there are probably guys in the league that are faster, but I've never seen a player that embodies both of them in game action.
And then in the NFC Championship game, obviously Tom Brady leads his team despite 3 second-half interceptions to the Super Bowl for the 10th time. Where, Amal, do you think Brady has to, at what level has to perform to be competitive with Kansas City in the Super Bowl?
I said this yesterday. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady have to have an A game. Tom Brady has to play like he did in that first half against the Green Bay Packers, where he was absolutely outstanding until late in the half. And then the Kansas City Chiefs, if they have a B to a B minus game, can still be victorious. But it would take a couple of turnovers. I just think the Kansas City offense right now is flourishing at a level kind of like what we saw out of the greatest show on turf with the Rams before they faced off against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and obviously the Patriots in the championship game in the Super Bowls. I think it's an incredible team in terms of offensive what they're able to do. And I'll tell you one thing that I thought has gone completely underrated this whole season is the Kansas City Chiefs defense. This defense has played well in the 2 postseason games. They're not getting enough credit for what they've done defensively. They've done a nice job. They gave up 24 points in that game, but it was kind of out of touch at that point in time, right? They gave up the onside kick, gave up a field goal. I mean, this was a great performance, in my opinion, by the Kansas City defense.
I thought this all year, I've said this Chiefs defense was better than last year's Super Bowl championship team. And that defense got the stops in the fourth down to get back in that game and beat San Francisco. So to your point. Now let's take a look at the opposite side of it. And where are you at if you're the Green Bay Packers?
I'll tell you what, they won't do this. I would fire Matt LaFleur. This, to me, I'm going to give you a college analogy. Reminds me of when Minnesota and Glenn Mason blew the lead against Mike Leach and Texas Tech in the Insight Bowl, and then they fired Glenn Mason. I think you need a program change. I think you go out there and you spend the money. Listen, whatever your personal opinion on Aaron Rodgers, I'm going to tell you, I think he's one of the great quarterbacks we've ever seen. This guy is unbelievable in terms of what he's able to do. But remember, this is a team, Mike, with a quarterback of this caliber, they've never given him a first-round wide receiver. Javon Walker was the last first-round wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers. Defensively, they've gotten better. They drafted the secondary. Jair Alexander's been outstanding, 2 picks yesterday. But think about this. I mean, this is a team that goes out and drafts Jordan Love. That was like a waste of a first-round pick. What are we doing if you're the Green Bay Packers? Mike Pettine? I mean, come on. I have a ton of Browns fans because I grew up in Cleveland, friends that are fans. They hated Mike Pettine. And now Green Bay people can't stand him. I'll tell you right now, if you're Matt LaFleur, if I were him last night, I'm on a charter jet out of Green Bay. I'm out of the state of Wisconsin. I mean, this guy's head's going to be on a stick.
I think the only thing that might be a saving grace for LaFleur is how poorly McCarthy performed in Dallas this year when you're looking back that recency. They're sort of longing for the days of Forrest Gregg back in Green Bay. You could see the disappointment on Aaron Rodgers as they walked off the field, and it was a very interesting post-game press conference.
From here, I mean, you kind of hit on some of the realities a minute ago. So how do you go on from here? How do you take the next step?
Yeah, Bill, that's a good question. I don't know. I really don't. There's a lot of unknowns going into this offseason now. And I'm going to have to take some time away for sure and clear my head and just kind of see what's going on with everything. But it's pretty tough right now, especially thinking about the guys that may or may not be here next year. There's always change. That's the only constant in this business. It's really tough to get to this point. Really, really tough. Especially with it only being one bye week in the playoffs. It's a grind just to get to this point. And that makes the finality of it all kind of hit you like a ton of bricks. That's why it's a gutting feeling in your stomach.
Paul, I know life is bigger than the moment, and he's reacting in the immediacy of that game. But is there any chance that Aaron Rodgers is not on the Green Bay roster next season?
Look, he's got the clout and the power to be able to force a trade if he wants. And I would hope he does it. You know, we see it in the NBA. Guys do it all the time. James Harden did it recently. I would love to see Aaron Rodgers out of Green Bay because, to me, what Matt LaFleur's decision said was, I believe in my defense more than I do you on fourth down and goal at the 9-yard line. We've got three timeouts and the 2-minute warning. We're going to play defense. Even though you didn't show much to me, I get in the second half you did slow them down. But I thought it was a little bit more conservative approach by the Tampa Bay team. You look at a player of his caliber, it's frustrating to me. I don't follow any particular team, but I love players, great players. And you see a guy like him, when you look back, I look at Aaron Rodgers, kind of like Peyton Manning's time in Indianapolis, and I say, wow, it's actually almost a failure. When Peyton won one Super Bowl in Indianapolis, Aaron Rodgers has been, listen, Rex Grossman, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers have all won the same number of NFC Championship games.
When you blow multiple NFC Championship games at home, that means you've wasted great opportunity here. We do know of one NFC North quarterback that'll be on the move, and that's Matthew Stafford, who was the overall first pick in 2009. 45,000 passing yards, 282 touchdowns, 144 interceptions. Pro Bowl player in 2014 and the 2011 NFL Comeback Player of the Year. He will be leaving the Lions. How much of a factor was the new head coach and offensive coordinator in the decisions for Matt Stafford to move on?
I think it definitely played a part. You know, Dan Campbell with the press conference, that's probably very regrettable at this point in time. But to me, I think Stafford is looking around, and you see they have no running game. I mean, Adrian Peterson, my God, half the time he was getting about 2 yards a carry. You take away the last game of the season, probably the first game of the season, he didn't do much for them. They have had injuries. They just haven't had the talent around him. This is a team that has never given him a running back with consistency. We talked about Aaron Rodgers not having players around him. It's the same thing with Stafford. Here's an opportunity. I still think he's a good quarterback. And I have to say, I was a person that was late to the Matthew Stafford party. I had a friend of mine say, hey, listen, this guy's better than you're giving him credit for. In the last couple of years, I've watched him. He just hasn't had the talent. He goes to a place like Washington, Miami, a team that's on the verge, but you upgrade the quarterback position. I think it upgrades your entire team. And then you can attract maybe another free agent or someone to come along and say, hey, listen, take a little bit less money. Come into our program. We have an opportunity to do something here, which is winning the Super Bowl, which is what everybody wants to do. I don't know if Stafford's going to get you over the top, but I still feel like he's a top 12 quarterback in this league.
The thing about where Stafford goes is you're going to have to take the $20 million cap hit. So who's positioned to do that? Well, the Patriots would be positioned to do that. And I think the interesting thing here is the Colts. I think the Colts are in the market, and it would be a big upgrade over Phillip Rivers. That's a solid team with a good offensive line and a running game. I think Matthew Stafford could fit in well there because there's so much support for him there.
Well, also think about the transition's pretty easy. You are going from one conference to the other, so people may not be as familiar with you. But the one problem is if you're Matthew Stafford, and I don't want to go to the AFC, because if you look at the AFC, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, you got potentially Joe Burrow in a year or two. You've got young teams there with young up-and-coming, if not already established, good to great quarterbacks in there. So to me, I think the NFC is a little bit easier route. When I look at the NFC, I don't see a truly dominant team right now.
I think that the Lions will not want to trade him within the NFC, though, and they will want to get him out of conference so that doesn't come back to bite him. Big slate in the NBA tonight, Amal. I know you are very seasoned and well-established, successful NBA. I've heard stories of you dating back 15 years, how well you've done on the
NBA. That's right. You can tell the story.
From comment. Oh, Amal used to kill these NBA second-half totals. And that's from our guy Matt Metcalf that runs Circa Sports here, how he first met Amal back at the Westgate many years ago. So big slate tonight. We'll highlight a couple games here. Heat and Nets, second game. Now game one, the Heat won 128-124. Of course, the Heat still, or the Nets won 128-124, still without Jimmy Butler, still without Tyler Hero, without Myles Leonard here. Any Any lean here tonight?
Yeah, no, not particularly, but I think it's going to be tough for Miami to play a second consecutive game against the Nets and perform at the level they did. They lost by 4 points last time out. I think it'll be a challenge for them to be able to do that. So that's the one concern I have from the Miami side. I will tell you this for people that are new, kind of listening in here or haven't heard you and I before. I'm more of an NBA situational better now. To me, I think there's some great spots when you look at certain matchups and things. You circle some of the games. I think that's something you take into consideration. Like, I can't wait for the Lakers to play the Brooklyn Nets. The flat earther is going to absolutely get a taste of LeBron James in that game. So, you know, to me, second halves are great opportunities. I'll quickly point out to one was the other night. The Lakers were up like 33, I think, against the Chicago Bulls. Bulls end up losing by 11 in that one.
Absolutely.
Hey, when we come back, we've got one game on the NHL slate tonight. We're going to find out who is Mike leaning towards. Is he going to take a side or is he going to go with the total? That's next. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed immediately delivers quality candidates from our resume database when you upgrade your job post. Get started at Indeed.com/credit. Mike, I'll tell you what, tonight, National Hockey League, we've got an interesting game. I don't want to say a good game because it really isn't, but I'll tell you, I know you're not necessarily an overbetter, but you look at this matchup between Ottawa and Vancouver. This Canucks team has been absolutely just horrendous defensively.
They're awful. Their penalty kill is only 65%.
Yeah.
They're giving up goals. And what's worse? I mean, we all remember Thatcher Demko from games 5, 6, and 7 in the Western Conference semifinals against the Knights, where he stood on his head and brought them back into that series. He's been god awful. He's 0-3 with a 5.5 goals against average already this year. He's been an absolute sieve. You know, they let Markstrom go. They thought then they got Holtby and they thought they had a great backup in Demko. It hasn't been that way. It's been remarkably worse with him. It's very tough to back this Vancouver side. Ottawa's been pretty poor. They get Matt Murray from the Penguins in goal. They're 1-2-1. Paulie Howard had an interesting play on this game. He played a goal in the first 10, and I tend to agree with that. I mean, this last series with Montreal, they just went back and forth, goal, 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 goal.
Well, think about this. Vancouver in their last four games has given up 22 goals. I mean, that's ridiculous. You're not going to win too many hockey games. And you mentioned it, Braden Holtby. He's not as effective as he was in Washington. And I think so many times, you know, I look at this in football. When guys switch via free agency, Le'Veon Bell went to the Jets, not as effective, just a name that kind of sticks out. There's so many guys that happens constantly. Sometimes with goaltenders, we're seeing with Matt Murray, he never had a goals against this high that he has right now when you look at what he's doing for Ottawa. I mean, and let's be honest, the Senators, Frederick Anderson was getting shot on every time. I mean, it was just unbelievable in terms of how many shots he would face a game. So I think if you're looking at this matchup, you're probably looking towards the over in this game. And I think we're seeing a 6.5 right now. And so for me, you know, look, which team is going to be held to 2 goals or less?
Yeah. And the NHL totals have been trending to the over, but the first periods have been under. For me, if anything, it's a look in game. And maybe if Ottawa can get a lead, I'll look at that side since they're the dog. +135 in game. If they can get a lead and get them at a short price, look at that. Demko might just really be out of form. Got some interesting matchups in college basketball tonight, Amal. Let's start this game in the Big 12 between Texas Tech and West Virginia at 4 o'clock Pacific.
Yeah, I think this is a terrific matchup here. You know, Big Monday usually has a great game in the Big 12. This Texas Tech team, very solid. Remember, this was a similar point spread line we saw when they went down to Austin and beat the Texas Longhorns. They were catching 1.5 in that one. If you recall, Mac McClung hit the big shot late in the game to pull out the victory for the Red Raiders on the road. This is a solid team, not a great team, but Beard's teams will play defense. We already know that, Mike. The one thing that concerns me a little bit with the Red Raiders overall, below 33% from beyond the arc. I like teams to be in that 35 to 36 range if they're going to be effective, particularly going on the road. When you play a team like the Mountaineers, it seems like West Virginia sends 9 guys to the glass every time on the offensive end. It's amazing how well Bob Huggins' teams do in terms of offensive rebounding. But This is a tougher game. I was leaning towards the Mountaineers here because it's at home, and as well as Texas Tech has played throughout the course of Beard's tenure, going on the road, I think, is always a challenge in conference play.
West Virginia throws these runs on you with that style of defense and the pressing and going aggressively. What they did at Oklahoma State was remarkable in the second half. We have a Mountain West matchup right here in Las Vegas tonight, Amal, as Utah State, who just had their 11-game winning streak broken by Colorado State in Logan, come to play UNLV. UNLV, a team that just doesn't have that many games under their belt. Only four conference games so far. We see Utah State laying 5, 5.5 here in this game.
Yeah, I thought this was a tricky number. I was leaning towards the Utes, but you know, it's funny. Towards the Aggies. I know people in Logan are going to be upset about that one. I apologize. But, you know, you look at UNLV, Bryce Hamilton, their leading scorer, averaging over 20 points a game. Mike, but my problem with him is he's a volume scorer. You know, he's not a guy that necessarily is a prolific shooter below 33% from beyond the arc. You look at the rest of the team, very effective from beyond the arc. I think if Bryce Hamilton would take a fewer shots and guys would defer a little bit less, this team could be a little bit more effective. TJ Otzelberger's team's got to be better on the defensive end. That's where their big problem is. They can score 75 a game, but can they get stops?
The only common opponent they have, Amal, is Colorado State, which Utah State just split with. UNLV actually led in both games against Colorado State and ended up blowing those leads and losing in close games. That would tend to me to look at a home side if you can get 5.5 or 6 right here.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think when you look at it, to me, the number is so critical in this one. I think Utah State wins this game, but now having to win by almost 7 spot on the road, that's tough because you're going to see a fairly competitive game.
I agree, Amal. I think this is a betting opportunity. Maybe you put this in a money line parlay if you're looking at something later with something like Virginia. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the rest of the college basketball slate, as well as tomorrow's EPL action, and how I'm going to hedge a 5-team parlay that I have live heading to Tottenham in just about 15 minutes. When we return on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We're gearing up for the big game here at VSiN, and of course, keeping you up to date on every other sports betting opportunity on the board. This week, as you've already noticed, we've updated our programming lineup. The Lombardi line is now 2 hours every weekday from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern, and we're excited to be here with you for the nuts from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern. This weekend, we also have our special big game preview show with Brent Musburger to get you ready for all the Super Bowl betting and prop action. You can always find our lineup on VSiN.com or in your daily VSiN subscriber email, along with all the latest sports betting data and updates from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. All right, we're back on the nuts. Mike Palm at Mike Palm Circa, Amal Shaw at Amal Shaw 1. We have two more college basketball games we want to talk about tonight. Let's start at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific with an ACC tilt. Syracuse goes to John Paul Jones Arena to face a Virginia squad that's won 15 conference games in a row. Amal, they're only allowing 57 points per game at home this year. Average margin of victory of 15, lane 7.
Yeah, I like Virginia in this one. I think Syracuse could get blown out. The thing is, if you're going to beat Syracuse, you got to do one thing effectively, and that's shoot the three ball. If you remember a couple of years ago, Virginia went on the road and couldn't miss. I think they were like 16 for 24 at the Carrier Dome because of how efficient they are from beyond the arc. They're 38% as a team, Mike. I think it's going to be a huge advantage for them in this matchup against Syracuse. Syracuse is a great offensive team, but defensively they leave a lot to be desired. Virginia Tech, we saw them struggle from the perimeter at the Carrier Dome the other day. Now you've got a team at home, as you alluded to, this game at JPJ. Virginia's offense, I think, should be able to put up some points. I like them in this spot here, lane 7.
Syracuse actually coming off their best game of the year that went over Virginia Tech 78-60. Virginia Tech ranked 16 at the time. And then we have a Pac-12 tilt, 8 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern, very late night here with Arizona playing Arizona State. This is a rematch from a game on Thursday with the Wildcats coming out on top 84-82.
Yeah, this was a terrific game. If you had a chance to see this one on Thursday, Arizona won it at the buzzer with a tip-in. To me, this is a game I'm leaning towards Arizona. You look at Arizona State. They were ranked in the top 25 early on. They get the win against Rhode Island. Things were going well. Then Remy Martin was out. I had a death in the family. Cherry missed some time. This team has struggled. They really have not played particularly well. I think this is a good spot for Sean Miller's team and Arizona. And what's the number? I think about 4.5.
Four and a half, yeah.
A little bit tricky number there. I think this is one maybe you wait for an in-game opportunity. I'm not thrilled about 4.5 against the intrastate rival, especially having knocked them off. Revenge spot for ASU here. But I still think going into the McHale Center is going to be tough for this team on the road. I think that's one you have to pay attention to. Arizona, especially if they're trailing at halftime, really like their chances. But Arizona State has been highly inconsistent. And Bobby Hurley's team, defense optional.
Yeah, they've lost too many close games, too. We're 1-4 in the Pac-12, and I think 3 of the 4 losses are by a one field goal or less.
Yeah, this is the team that struggled. I know we're about to switch gears here to soccer real quick. I'll tell you one game I want people to look out for, Big 12 tonight. Iowa State hosting Oklahoma State. Normally speaking, Hilton Magic, Iowa State. But to me, Cade Cunningham, expected back in the lineup, not going to play a ton of minutes, could come off the bench, but I still like Oklahoma State laying 3 to 3.5.
All right, so yesterday I put together a 5-team soccer parlay. It was really a 2-team parlay, and then I took some big favorites with it. It was really a Leicester City Lille parlay, Lille being the side in France, right? And so we laid 165 with Leicester, 585 with Bayern Munich, Barcelona without Messi, 345, and we got Lille home 1-0. So now we're live to Tottenham today, minus 420 in the parlay. This game is moving all around the board. Earlier this morning, it went up to 650. It's down to 380. So you're seeing a lot of action here on this Tottenham game where they go to play Wycombe. Wycombe is at the bottom of the Champions table. They're in last out of 24 teams. They've only won 3 times in 24 matches. And now Mourinho takes his squad there. So I've been vested $1,500 to make – it was plus a 7-11 is what that 5-team parlay played. So to make about $10,600 to get back 12,000. So how should I hedge this? Well, I mean, what are the odds? I could take Wycombe at plus 1,300, or I could take, I can take a draw. Here's what I want to do. I want to give myself an opportunity to win both bets. So what I did is I took Wycombe plus 2 goals in this game.
Nice.
So obviously the best result is Tottenham by 1. I scoop. Yeah. I win by. I laid 3,900 to win 3,000. It was minus 130 plus 2 goals. So hedging off about a third of the bet. If Tottenham wins by 1, I scoop both, right? And I pick up 13.5. If Tottenham wins by 2, I push and I still win the parlay. If Tottenham wins by 3 or more, I blow the 4,000. I still pick up 6,500 on the right. On the bet. The worst result, obviously, if it's a push or Wycombe wins, and then I cover the 1,500 and I pick up 3,000 and profit 1,500.
No, but that's smart because you look at the lineup today. No Sonny, no Kane in the lineup. That's the one thing when you get these games that are not Premier League matchups or some of these, whether it's in Spain in La Liga when you have the Copa del Rey and some of these other matches, you don't get those regular lineups. And that's why I think you're seeing such a precipitous drop on Tottenham's side in terms of the number. And by the way, 98-year-old Joe Hart in net today for Tottenham.
The team England goalkeeper for many. He's buried in that Tottenham lineup playing just in the Europa matches.
Hey, listen, if this is Joe Hart at Man City, I think you're going to get a clean sheet. But this is not Joe Hart from the Man City days.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't think that they would play Lloris today. Yeah. I didn't know what they do with their forwards because they have the match at home against Liverpool on Thursday, right? Which is obviously a very important match. Liverpool at 4th in the EPL and Tottenham at 5th right now.
Hey, listen, you got Gareth Bale in the lineup. Trust me, a lot of people in Madrid still appreciate Gareth Bale and what he was able to do in the Champions League final.
Not getting a lot of time, Bale. And Mourinho made comments about that. You got to earn your time here.
Listen, Gareth's got a lot of money to count. he's busy counting the money.
Let's take a look, Amal, at tomorrow's EPL. I know obviously, with this show, there's some matches that are going to go earlier in the day. A game that interests me tomorrow, which goes at 12:15 Pacific, 3:15 p.m. Eastern time, is Southampton at Arsenal. Arsenal, a small favorite here. Both these teams have been good to the unders. I look at 2.5 in this game and laying 20 cents the under. That'll be part of the playbook tomorrow.
Yeah, to me, you look at this team, Aubameyang, where have you been, man? He's got to step up for this Arsenal team. His team has been inconsistent. That's the one thing. You look at the middle of the pack in the table right now, sitting at 27 points. Really, when you look at this team, this is a historic club. It's done very well, but right now things not going their way. Southampton, to me, I don't think they get enough credit at times for how well they've played throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. The other match I look at is Newcastle at Leeds. Newcastle has been absolutely dreadful giving up goals here in the last 2 weeks, and Leeds is a dead-under team with their style of play. It's still 2.5. I think this game gets to 3 if you're looking at an over, and I don't play too many overs. You lay the 40 cents with 2.5. I hate to go over three and have to score four goals, but both these teams have been pretty civvy.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. When you mentioned it, and Newcastle not really prolific in terms of scoring, just 18 goals on the season. And to your point, I think that's what you're trying to look at in some of these matchups, tendencies in terms of teams play and their style of play. The other thing I would point out, which you do a prolific job of, because you and I talk all the time, you get an early goal, let's say in the first 15 minutes of the match. You look at a game that went from 2.5, it goes to 3.5. It's a great opportunity to jump on an under 3.5 in that one because of the fact that you were probably anticipating 2.5 is a probably good number, and 3 could potentially beat you. Now you've got a huge advantage.
The caution there, Amal, is if it comes to be a penalty. I always worry when a penalty kick opens the game because I look for a makeup call later. Okay, coming up in the final segment, we'll get into the Palm Reader playbook and see if Amal's in on any plays.
Basketball season heating up, Bet Rivers has a special offer for new customers. Deposit $100 using the promo code BET200 and you'll get $200 in free bets only at Bet Rivers Sportsbook. It has never been easier and better than this. With a reliable app, easy sign-up process, and deposit match that lets you bet with house money first. As always, get $250 match bonus, fastest payouts, and only one-time playthrough at Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Must be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. In Colorado, call 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House.
Well, Amal, this is what they all came for, the plays. And we're going to do something different with the Palm Reader playbook. Now, we've been doing this for a couple years. Group one, group two, group three, people get a little confused. 5-3-1 units.
Very confusing.
Is it too, well, I mean, every day I do it. Is it too extreme? You know, five, should you just go 3-2-1? So we'll reset it. It ends up there were like 2,200 plays. I mean, it's like a week of Greg Peterson. And we made some small profit with some of the future bets in that. So we'll reset with this show, the nuts. And what we're going to do instead of group one, group two, group three, we'll just say how many units we play. And for all of you out there, what is your unit? I don't know. Your unit's $10, it's $20, it's $50, it's $100, yeah. It's $500, it's $10,000. Everybody's different. Your bankroll is based on your discretionary income and how seriously you take this. But for me, typically a unit would be, $100, I would say. On in-play, it's a little larger than that. I have a two-unit, one play today, a two-unit play, and this goes to the Mexican Soccer League. And we're going to go with Pachuca and Cruz Azul under 2.5, and we're going to lay 25 cents here. So that's a two-unit play. So in other words, because it's $1.25, I'm laying 2.5 units to win 2 units here in this game. Now, let me tell you about this Mexican League. Most of these games are televised, which is great, and you have access to in-game. Some of these fields are in really bad condition. They look like they're painted. I just think that inhibits the scoring. Now, since they've returned to Mexico, there's been 16 games. 13 of the 16 have gone under 2.5 goals.
Wow.
Including both games yesterday, falling, landing flat on two. At Cruz Azul, I don't see them getting above one here. So I think there's some value. And then you can manipulate it in-game. And there's one other game I looked at today. It's Porto. As people know that have followed me, I love FC Porto in the Portuguese League. But I'm not going to lay over $3 with them. And I'm not going to lay... I'm not going to lay a goal and a half or a goal at a negative and I still have to lay a price. So I'm going to pass on Porto today. Typically, if I can get them on the three-way at less than -150 or -160, I'll play them. But that's a game I would take a look at, too, if you have some in-game opportunities there.
Yeah, Mike, you're going to be surprised by this. I actually have a play I like today.
You have a play?
Yeah, you know what? Once a month. I like to get 12 plays in a year.
That's a little generous once a month. I mean, We used to go months without seeing a play on My Guys in the Desert. Not that you weren't betting, but in giving an official pick.
Hey, listen, man, we all can't be the bookie's best friend.
Yeah, ask Joe Asher. Okay.
And so, you know, listen, I'm going – this is a rare play for me. I don't particularly like this style of play, but I like Oklahoma State today on the road taking on Iowa State. Little Hilton magic here not working anymore for the Cyclones. I mean, normally speaking, Iowa State, big Monday, KU coming in, probably a four-point road favorite. You're all over Iowa State, and they win the game outright. But they haven't played since January 9th. Remember, they got blown out by Texas Tech by 27 in that one at home. Cade Cunningham, potentially one of the first picks in the draft, if not the first overall pick for Oklahoma State, missed the Saturday game against Baylor due to COVID protocol. I expect him to be off the bench tonight, according to Mike Boynton, the head coach of the Oklahoma State Cowboys. This line, I got a 2.5, Mike. It's gone to 3, 3.5. I would take this one up to -4. Not necessarily thrilled about that number, but I like Oklahoma State. Their offense is much better. Iowa State, this is just not a particularly good team for Steve Prohm. I think this team's going to struggle throughout the course of the season. If you look at them and what they've done this year, I think it's going to be tough. Now, I will say one other thing that a lot of people have been betting against may have hurt them. Betting against teams coming off a COVID protocol, people think they're going to be out of sync. Actually, these teams have played particularly well. When they've had that two-week absence, they're ready to go. It's not like offenses in football where the first week you may not see that continuity. But all that being said, to me, the ideal number here, if you can get the 3, I think it's sitting at 3.5 now with Oklahoma State. Take a look at the Cowboys. If it hits 4.5, don't touch it. But to me, the preferred number here is 3 to 3.5.
The last time you gave a play was Quinnipiac, and I laid 2 points against Canisius. How did that turn out? Well, that's okay. The last time I remember.
You know what? I tell you what. You know what? You're the ideal guy for me to do the show with. You're like every guy in the book, right? Like you remember the one loss. You can win 20 in a row, but you remember the one loss. By the way, that was about a year and a half, maybe two years ago.
2 years ago. It's the only play I ever got from you.
If you had listened to My Guys in the Desert, I gave you Virginia win the national title, Clemson to win the national title, and Red Sox to win the World Series. I don't know what more you want.
Very good, Amal. Thank you. You're on a nice run there.
I don't disagree, but here's the thing. I can't believe you're bringing up a game from 2 years ago.
I'm still upset about it. You said go to the window. You told me. I was sitting at Long Bar with Derek. He said, I have a game for you, Mike. You want to pick? Take Quinnipiac.
Well, Clayton Kershaw's not undefeated in the postseason either.
All right, let's reset Super Bowl 55, where the Kansas City Chiefs will take on Tampa Bay playing in their home stadium. Right now, the line is 3, a little bit juiced to the Chiefs. 56.5 for the total. Have you gotten down any wagers yet on this opener, Mo?
I did take a small play on the under 57. I'm not a big fan of taking the totals in this game, but I just thought the number was a little bit high. You know, if you wind up with a situation where you have a failure in the red zone, you have an opportunity to stay under. That's exactly what we saw twice with the Green Bay Packers yesterday, once in the first half, then obviously the late game situation where they didn't score. But in terms of the side, I am leaning towards Kansas City. My concern, though, a little bit is we saw Jason Pierre-Paul absolutely abuse the left side of that Green Bay offensive line without David Bakhtiari in there. And I'm concerned without Fisher in the lineup for Kansas City, how much of an impact that has. I do think Mahomes' toe probably gets a little bit healthier. And I think this team will be able to move the ball effectively. We saw that when these two teams played earlier. But give Tampa credit. They are absolutely at the apex of where they're playing right now, and that's what you want to be at. You want to be, you know, Derek Jeter always used to talk about in baseball, it's not about the best team, it's about the hottest team. And right now, to me, Tampa, I could make the case, is the hottest team. I know Kansas City has one loss. I'm not counting that Chargers game going back to, what, week 7 or 8 against the Raiders. But to me, this is not as much of a slam dunk as maybe this Chiefs game was against the Bills yesterday.
Do you think Arians tries to run the ball a little bit more? Neither the Packers nor the Bucs were effective running the ball in Lambeau yesterday. The Bucs were very effective running the ball against New Orleans in the Superdome in that game, even when they were behind to control that pass rush and then open up things for Breeze. If they do, that goes to your under theory as well.
Yeah, also, I don't know if Tampa's defense can rely on getting another multiple-game turnover, right? They had 2 turnovers yesterday. They had 4 turnovers against the New Orleans Saints the first time around. So all those things are a factor in terms of how this team plays defensively. They capitalized on it, too, getting points quickly yesterday after White picked up the fumble. They score immediately.
All right. Well, we've got some time. There's some more NBA games we want to touch on before we get you out of here. Raptors and Pacers face off again tonight in a game that the Raptors won on a back-to-back here, 107-102 yesterday. Pacers laying 2 in this matchup.
Yeah, you know, to me, this is a Toronto team. Unfortunately for them, they've been playing down in Tampa. I think there's a little bit more focus, hopefully, coming from this team. But right now, off to a slow start overall. This is not my kind of game. Look, Indiana, solid team. I'm just not sure where this team is going. You trade away Victor Oladipo. I'm not a big fan of this matchup right now from either side.
two MVP candidates square off tonight, and the Nuggets go to Dallas to play the Mavericks, Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic. The Nuggets are a 1.5-point favorite here, total 222.5.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, this is going to get some good ratings in Eastern Europe in this one. I'll tell you, you look at Jokic has been outstanding for this team. I mean, averaging 12 boards a game, 26, and Luka's just a walking triple-double. This Mavs team, though, just 8-8 so far. Same with the Denver Nuggets. Now, they're starting to get a little bit better. Denver, to me, is a team that could make some potential noise in the Western Conference. Mike, what did you say this line is sitting at?
1.5 the last I checked. Nuggets, 1.5.
Yeah, I actually would side with the home side here, Dallas, at 0.5. I don't like laying it here on the road with Denver. This is, however, the one thing that concerns me a little bit, revenge spot for Denver in this game. Remember, Dallas beat them up in the Mile High City in that overtime game on, it was a Thursday night. Luka was unbelievable in that matchup.
The Celtics, and getting Jason Tatum back, will travel to Chicago to play the Bulls tonight. They're laying 4 points on the road. What a difference from Thibodeau to Billy Donovan in terms of offensive production for the Bulls, going from 27th in points in the league, now ranked 4th in points per game.
Yeah, Zach LaVine's really turning into a superstar very quietly. I mean, we all knew this kid's athleticism, but he could flat-out ball, really doing a terrific job, averaging, I think, 26, 27 points a game. But I'm looking at the home team here. Remember, Chicago got embarrassed by the Lakers a few nights ago. I think good opportunity with the number at 4.5 here. Boston with an easy walkover. I think it was against the Cavaliers yesterday. I think what they win by 38. Now, the good thing for them is they didn't have to play a lot of their guys throughout the entirety of the game. But to me, 4.5 is a bit of a tricky number, laying it on the road with the Celtics. I'd look at the home team here getting the 4.5.
Interesting game in another of the two-game series, the 76ers in Detroit to play the Pistons. I was impressed with the 76ers. Big win over the Celtics. Came back off the back-to-back and beat the Pistons 114 to 110. Embiid is saying he and Ben Simmons love playing together now. It's a whole new thing this year. I love Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons loves me. Is the 76ers team with Daryl Morey and going away from analytics turning the corner here?
There's a possibility. When you look at the talent of a Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, you really have a duo that not only could be just good for a year or two, you could have a stretch and a tremendous run in Philadelphia. I'll tell you, though, my concern with Philly is, will Ben Simmons ever learn to shoot the basketball? And if he can ever make some shots, this guy would be the ultimate weapon in the NBA. But until that point in time, I have some reservation. By the way, no offense to Derek Stevens and company, but I didn't realize the Detroit Pistons still played basketball. I mean, this team is horrendous, 3-13. To me, this is what, Mike, what's the line we're seeing here?
Six and a half, yeah.
That's a big number. You mentioned it. They just played 2 days ago, tight game. But I'm not interested in laying 6.5 in a road spot with Philadelphia playing a back-to-back spot. Anytime you lose a game, you generally, if you're a competitor, you're going to come out and play with some energy and some enthusiasm. So for me, this is a stay-away spot.
All right. We're there. We got through it, the first show.
Yeah, I tell you, the first thing I can't wait to is get off the air and stretch my legs out. Holy cow. I mean, this is like being in a casket over here.
Yeah, and get out and get a nice cold water, too. Yeah. A little warm in the studio here. Well, we hope you enjoyed it, folks. First ever edition of The Nuts. Paul Shaw and Mike Palm here. I know we had some fun. I hope you did, too. A little more slate of games tomorrow. We get some more NHL, more soccer with EPL coming back. And, of course, more Super Bowl talk. Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow, 11 o'clock Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, to The Nuts. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.